Hello, this is Paul Sollentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. Thanks for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast. We're going to talk baseball today. Shockers are in their last few days, last week of fall baseball, and we're going to talk with pitching coach Mike Steele. Mike is in his third year with the Shockers. How are you doing today, Mike?
Pretty good. Thank you for having me.
All right, let's get right to it. First, let's talk about last year. Shocker pitching really took a step forward. ERA dropped from 5.97 in 2016 down to 3.91. Last year, a lot of strikeouts that we'll talk about. Five pitchers off that staff were drafted. Cody Hoyer went in the sixth round to the White Sox to kind of lead that group. Mike, tell us about 2017. Where did that improvement come from?
Well, I think what you had is you had a lot of guys that that came from the year before that was more of a foundation laying year for those guys. When you come in and you take over for a guy like Brent, there was a lot of things that were good, and then there were some things that had to change just as far as a health and just kind of getting used to me being the pitching coach. There were guys that it's like you wish they had another year underneath their belts to get them. Cody Hoyer being one of them. He's a guy I wish I had as a freshman, but I really think that going through the success we had in 16 from, we started off pretty good. We went through a really rough patch because we had a bunch of road series with La Tech and LSU and Cal Poly. And then having those guys have to kind of fight back to finish the year. And then really getting to understand the personnel and then putting guys in positions, especially, after that year, 10 of those guys stayed around here all summer. Cody Hoyer being one of them, Keelan Kilgore, McGinnis, Lungwitz, Samburn. A lot of those guys didn't go out and play. They stayed here and got after it and put, 3 months worth of work into their body. So then coming into the fall, we were able to address specific pitching things with them. Plus they had the year of work under their belt and they knew the system. They knew what the workday consisted of. And then just going into the year and being able to start off the year and really, get out to a really good start, 19-4, and get those guys in a position to just go out and be successful and in the right role. So, switching the conferences, I think probably one of the best things, we had a terrible ERA in the Missouri Valley my first year. And then being able to switch conferences and go from the 15th best conference to the 4th best conference, but then still drop our conference ERA down to I think it was like a 4.7. That was really good, especially the way we did it, having to go on the road. And this conference is no joke, but, I think a lot of it came from just, the developmental process of the guys and learning what they need to do and when they need to do it. And plus, they put a lot of work in the barn. There's a lot of hay in that barn right now. So, yeah, that was, I think, what it attributed to it was a lot of that work.
That the plan of having pitchers stick around here, work on their bodies during the summer, rest their arms a little bit, is that something you'll use pretty consistently here?
Yeah, I mean, it's selective. I think the big thing when I got here was there was a lot of guys that were coming back from, injuries. I mean, there's a lot of labrum strains and UCL stuff and, and really guys had never really taken a break. So, them being able to take a break, put the 3 months worth of work into their body, not only does it keep them healthy, but it gives them some confidence because they had actually committed to their bodies. They were able to recover, quicker. So, but last year, I sent Siegel and Snavely, they both went up to Alaska and pitched for, a guy that played for me at Long Beach. I sent Lindemann out to go play in the Northwoods League, but, kept McGinnis back. Who else? Miner stayed back. I mean, there were guys that stayed back, and then a lot of the a lot of the incoming guys, you know, we had them shut down and gave them their program so they could get after it. But it's just, it's individualized, you know, depending on what kids need. You know, you get a freshman that throws a bunch of innings, he doesn't need to go out and pitch anymore in the summer. He needs to get his body ready.
Was there a particular success story from that summer that you would really point to as, you know, that's the way it's supposed to work and he really benefited from it?
Well, I would say, you know, there's three of them. I mean, you know, number one being Cody Hoyer. You know, Cody came here as a walk-on, you know, 6'5", 180-pound, just gangly kid with arms and legs going everywhere. And he, you know, worked his way into being, you know, a decent relief option for us and even starting the last couple of weekends of the year as a sophomore. But then for him to go out and start every single Friday for us and go from being kind of a guy that should be really good to almost kind of being a prospect to being a legit top 10 round pick, that was you know, one of the guys that, you know, I was most proud of for the work that he put in, because there's a maturity process that comes into that. When you're sitting there for 3 months and all you have to do is come out and work and grind your body, and then they went work jobs and they worked our camps. I mean, you know, that was, you know, there's a maturity that comes along with that. You know, the other one being, you know, Chandler Sanburn. I mean, Sanburn came here, he was 87 to 90. He was a guy that really smart, could have went to the Army, or could have went to West Point. And then, you know, going through the developmental process, he goes from being just kind of a, you know, a decent armed right-handed pitcher to being 94 to 97 for most of the year and closing games for us and being one of our, you know, best relief options out of the pen. So, and then Keelan Kilgore, you know, local guy that, you know, came here, you know, really was underdeveloped and physically, and it took him a little bit to get going during the season. But once, you know, after, you know, we finally got him to embrace just letting the ball eat and attack in the middle of the plate, you know, he ended up being 90-93 the rest of the way, and was probably our most valuable relief guy towards going down the stretch. Yeah, you know, and then to see what he did against South Florida in the opening game of the tournament, I mean, he goes 6 innings and, you know, doesn't give up a run, gives up 1 hit, and, I mean, it was unbelievable. And then to see it continue as he went to pro ball was awesome as well. So, and another guy was Cody Tyler. You know, Cody Tyler had a really good freshman year, went through, battled some injuries, you know, kind of was up and down, was a starter for us, and then battled another injury, and then put him in a role in the pen, and he was just outstanding for the entire year and was a great leader. But he was also one of those guys that was around here all summer and working and getting after it.
You mentioned Cody Hoyer on Fridays. You mentioned several guys, you know, finding the right roles, and it seemed like that was one of the big keys to last year's staff. There was a consistency on the weekends for a large part. There was consistency coming out of the bullpen. How important is that to building a staff that can really hold up over an entire season?
Well, it's really important because I learned this from, you know, Troy Buckley at Long Beach State when I was there, who was the pitching coach, and then he was the head coach, and then he hired me. But you want to grow your starting pitching from within your program. So you want guys to be coming in, fighting for chances to start as freshmen, but then watching the upperclassmen go about their work, and then having the ability to do it is one thing, but having the talent to do it is one thing, but the ability to do it is another. So now we've had 3 years of guys watching other guys develop and what it takes to be a starting pitcher and how to go deep into games and how to develop a third pitch and to hold the running game down. And, you know, yeah, you may give up a run in the second, but you're trying to go 7. I mean, the goal is to go 7. So, yeah, you have to grow your starting pitching from within your program, which is – it's hard to do. It takes some time, you know, especially from a health standpoint. I mean, Tommy Barnhouse, that's another guy that, you know, if we can keep him healthy – and it's not like it's anything that's torn. I mean, it's a flexor tendon that just keeps flaring up on him. But that's another guy that's 90-94 with a breaking ball and a changeup, and there's a meanness to him. And he was just dealing for us before that thing flared up at Connecticut, and then it just didn't bounce back. So that's been a big, we've been very careful with him, but that's a front line, top of the rotation starter for us as well.
That's a good segue into talking about the fall. You've had a good long look at the pitching staff this fall. It'll wrap up this weekend with the Shocker World Series and the scrimmage. What have you learned this fall?
I learned this fall that the number one, the process works. We need to let the process works, and so much so that we're able to have a system in place that, the McGinnis, the Siegels, the Eddies, the, Snavely, the returning guys, Barnhouse, these guys have taught our younger guys not only just the picks and the signs and the, how to do all that stuff, but, what the mentality is and what the expectations are to be a pitcher, to be a Shocker pitcher. So we're really, that was really good. And then, I think the thing that's kind of really rose to the top is we have, Sammy and Todd and, a lot of the guys that were here, the recruiting that they've done has been outstanding. So we have four or five freshmen that are going to be significant contributors that are ready to go. And so they're competitive. They have breaking balls. They can throw hard. They're physical. And, it's a pretty exciting pitching staff.
Something new this year, teams are allowed to play scrimmages against other Division I competition. Wichita State went to Nebraska, went to Arkansas. Mm-hmm. What do you get out of those kind of experiences?
Well, for me, it's kind of like one of those things. Like, do you want to go out there? Do I need to go throw, like when we played Nebraska? I threw Eddie one inning. I threw McGinnis one inning. Or I threw him two innings. I threw Siegel an inning. And then I threw a bunch of young guys. The other way around is you can go, well, let's just throw all of our guys and let's, go win this thing and not get these other guys' experience and, kind of pander to, well, they lost in Nebraska. Well, okay. I mean, had we wanted to, I could have threw all of our returning guys and really probably not lost at all. I'm sure, coach could have played all of the returning guys for the entire game and made sure that, we did win. But I think it's a great thing because you can really get some guys exposed to Division I level baseball. And especially the young ones, you throw them in there, they're not so shell-shocked come the springtime. So that's been good. Now we turned around and for the first nine innings at Arkansas, we're going to throw our guys out. There's 6,000 people there. I threw our returning guys that are going to be, big time, carry the bulk of our innings. And, we gave up two earned runs and through nine innings, we punched out 15 of probably one of the best offenses in the country. The game ends up being 10-1, but, now I threw a bunch of puppies out there, and then it takes one guy to have one bad inning. And then, and that was Liam, and that happens. We're trying to get some stuff done, and he gave up, ended up giving up a couple of bloops and a hit and then gave up a bomb. So I think it's really valuable. I love that you can take your guys that haven't seen D1 competition in a game setting like that and put them in it.
Yeah, it seems to make a lot of sense. You mentioned Liam Eddy. He had a really strong, fabulous start to mm-hmm. his freshman year, and then he kind of struggled down the stretch, maybe the last, four weeks or so. Did he just kind of run out of gas, a little freshman fatigue? How are you
trying
to? Well,
I think that was the big thing. I think, Liam last year started the year and really pitched his way into being in the rotation like he earned it. He starts off the year first seven starts. I think he wins his first four starts, throws pretty good the next two, and then starts kind of waning off physically. Liam was pitching at like 175. He's 6'4", 175. And then all the stuff that comes along with that is now you start to compromise the delivery. The stuff starts to get exposed a little bit because it's not overwhelming velocity and stuff. It was command to both sides and a breaking ball. And then he started to lose it. And then so that's part of the developmental process as well. And then, you know, ended up, you know, having to sit for a little bit and come out of the pen and kind of retool him. It's kind of the same thing I had to do with Hoyer his sophomore year. I mean, he started out the gate and then he was terrible. And then we had to sit him for a month and really kind of retool everything up and let the dust kind of settle. And then he ended up being one of the better pitchers at the end of the year. Well, you know, Liam did the same thing. I mean, he threw 5 scoreless at Memphis the last game of the year. And so all it did was it let us fuel the fire for him to get there in the offseason and be like, hey, man, this is why you got to get after it. And he did. He put on, you know, 19 pounds, I think he put on during the summer. And, you know, and a lot of that's physical growth just from, you know, physical maturity, but it's also the guy worked his butt off. So, you know, the thing we're dealing with him now is now there's a different body and there's different ways he's going about generating velocity. And so he's kind of had an up and down fall, but it's one of those things that I think once it settles, you know, like his yesterday or 2 days ago, he went out and threw, you know, 4 scoreless innings for us in the inner squad against the, you know, against the good team. So, he's going to be just fine. You know, he's a guy that's got maturity. He's, you know, he likes to compete. He kind of keeps the same composure. And then we just had to go to the next level of development for him.
You mentioned Tommy Barnhouse. I'm sure he would be a guy who's, you know, weekend rotation guy for you. Clayton McGinnis is back. Tell us how some of the veterans are shaping up, and, you know, we're several months out, but what's the weekend rotation maybe tentatively look like at this point?
Tentatively right now, you know, if we were going, Clayton McGinnis, hands down, would be our Friday night starter. He has been outstanding the entire fall. You know, he's just showed so much growth maturity-wise that, and now he's got stuff. He's, you know, 90 to 93, stays in his delivery, commands to both sides, has an out pitch and a slider, is able to flip a curveball in for a strike, and his changeup has really developed into his second best pitch. So, you know, he's a 3-4 pitch mix guy that can pitch at the front of rotation against anybody. I think he, you know, 4 innings against Arkansas. I mean, he gave up a 2-run home run in the first and then went on, didn't give up any for 3 more innings, and he punched out 7 in 4 innings and 1 walk. So he was, right now, he would be our Friday night starter. And I think our, you know, our Saturday guy right now is Barnhouse, Stumpfig. They're in the mix for that. And then kind of how it falls out on Sunday is one of the two. Another guy that's making a push is, you know, Alex Siegel. I mean, Alex Siegel, shoot, he pitched 2 1/3 against Arkansas, punched out 6, you know, and was outstanding. So, you know, the two guys to look out for is, you know, Miller Plyman and Cal Carver. I mean, these are two young freshmen that got, you know, that have pitches. Physically, we got to get them where they are. You know, Miller's, you know, he's 87 to 91. Got a breaking ball. He's really clean. He's 6'4". You know, has some pitchability. You know, really, really like where he's at. And then Cal is just an absolute performer. You know, I think he was somewhere like 30-1 in his high school career in Texas in the highest level. He's a left-handed pitcher in every aspect of the description too. I mean, it's hat kicked off to the side. It's, you know, a bunch of funky pitches and, you know, throws a ball across the plate. And so those two freshmen they're going to be battling for it as well. And then, you know, and then the other guy left out, you know, Liam is, you know, he's obviously, you know, needs to get back to where he was, but he's a guy that's definitely in that rotation.
You mentioned Cal Carver. He's one of many Texans on this roster, several from San Antonio. Tell us a little bit about how and why Texas has turned into such an important recruiting area for this baseball program.
Well, I think, you know, the university, you know, gives us a lot of academic freedom as far as what we can offer guys. So if you get guys from Texas, you can, you know, with the Shocker City and the Shocker Select program, you can make pretty good deals for them to come to school. The other thing is, you know, it's got to be a good mixture of, you know, the Kansas, Nebraska, Missouri, Colorado, you know, those guys are a good 9 to 12 months behind a Texas player as far as readiness to play now at the Division I level. Just because of the – not so much the weather, even though that does factor in, but the level of competition that those kids face in Texas with the amount of people that are in the state, they're going to play at a higher level more often against better competition. So they've – you know, the hitters have seen 90-92. The pitchers have faced the first, second-round draft picks a couple of times. They've played in big stadiums down there in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and San Antonio and Houston. So it's a matter of readiness. Now, that doesn't, you know, that doesn't discount anything with the kids from the north. I mean, I'm from Michigan. You know, it took me 2 years to be D1 ready. That's why I had to go to junior college. So, you know, the good mixture that we have, and really about going out and finding the right players that fit the right spots. I think in this 19 class, I mean, shoot, we have the top. So we have six of the seven top 2019s in this class that are committed to us for, you know, according to PBR, but because they were the better players, you know, but we do have a good mixture of, you know, probably seven or eight more Texas guys coming in as well. So, you know, I think, you know, Todd has done a great job and Sammy's done a tremendous job of finding the right mixture of guys that are ready to come in and then guys that are going to be able to come in, but there's going to be some development. And then at the end of the process, they're going to be really good Division I players.
So this will be your second year in the American Athletic Conference. How has that changed or affected recruiting, the recruiting pitch that Wichita State can make?
Well, it's been awesome because now you're talking about, you know, you're talking about flying to Connecticut. You're talking about going down to Florida for, you know, two different teams in Florida. You're going to Tulane, which is in New Orleans. You're going to East Carolina. You know, you're going to go down to Memphis. You're going to go down to Houston. And what that does is when you take the draft and people need to see you to get drafted, you know, last year, obviously, with, you know, Alec and Janista and Gunner and the guys that we had in the, you know, especially the first two, you know, there was going to be a lot of heavy hitters, like as far as cross-checkers and national scouting directors and national cross-checkers and assistant GMs that were coming because they were trying to evaluate where and how many millions of dollars are we going to give these guys. I mean, they were so, but you take the kid like Cody Hoyer, who's a sixth round, kind of a mid, you know, sixth to tenth round guy. What you're able to do is you're able to go all over the country and be seen by Northeast scouts and a Northeast cross checker. And so there's an evaluation. Then you're able to be seen by South scouts and Southeast scouts and Southeast cross checkers. So when you sit in the draft room, like I've been able to do three, four times, and then once as a scout, is you have more information from more sources that can propel your guys to being put on that draft board and being picked because more people have seen them. Versus if you're just staying like in the Valley, the only time we got really outside of the area scouts and the area cross checkers and the regional cross checkers was, you know, you jump down to Northern Texas, but to play DBU. But the thing is usually the guy that has North Texas has Oklahoma and Kansas. So there's kind of like the, he's going to see it. Or you go over and you get over to Illinois. Well, those area scouts probably have, you know, Illinois, Missouri, maybe Kansas. But now you're able to be seen by the whole group, basically from Kansas over to the East Coast. I mean, so that's a big deal as far as saying, hey, man, you want to get drafted. You're going to be able to play all over the country. Everybody's going to be able to see you. And they're going to have a pretty good look at you. You know, now you got to play well, right? And you got to have the tools and the stuff to go on. But I think that that's an attractive thing, especially if you start talking to kids, know, the AAC is a legit baseball conference. I mean, they were fourth last year. So now you're talking you're talking ACC, SEC, you know, Big 12, and the Pac-10, and then the AAC. Well, there's the top five conferences, with the Big 10 being right behind it. And then each year, you know, the SEC is always going to be number one. ACC is always going to be in the top three. The Big 12 and the Pac-10 are always going to kind of be moving around between 3 to 2 to 5, somewhere in there. But the AAC is going to be able to stay in the top five just because, I mean, it's legit baseball schools and legit baseball areas.
What is the, or how do you mentally help these kids when, you know, the draft is important, but mm-hmm. you don't want them to make it too big of a deal? How do you deal with the scouts in the stands, the radar guns, those kind of things? How, you know, it's a big deal, but on the other hand, I guess you don't want them to get too focused on it at times.
Yeah. You know, it's tough because we all, growing up, you know, we all dream of playing professional baseball. And, you know, when you're 10, you're not, you know, you're dreaming about playing on TV in the big leagues. And the route to playing in the big leagues is to get drafted. Now, not all of us, very few of us, are able to do that out of high school. So, you have to take that into account. But then you have to also show these guys that if you can – what it takes to go to professional baseball and what it takes to – make it through the minor leagues and make it to the major leagues, yeah, there has to be a sufficient talent level. And yes, you have to be judged and evaluated to having the tools to play in the big leagues. But you have to get them to understand that it's not the best guys all the time to make it. It's the guys that show up to work every single day. And they outlast everybody else. They take the beatings. They handle the success right. They stay the process. They stay the course. They stay the line. And so with my background and then my relationships that are, you know, with the guys that are so important in us always talking to them about, look, take care of today. Take care of today. Don't, you know, especially when they get to the draft years, don't, you know, you're going to get evaluated. You're going to get seen. You can't be thinking about that if it takes your eyes off of taking care of today and getting better every single day. And I think that's one of the hardest things, but it's the most important things that we have to do as coaches, is to reprioritize, to reevaluate, help them reevaluate what's the most important thing, and continue to preach it and be consistent with it. Hey, your throwing program today. Hey, you're stretching today. Hey, you're weightlifting today. Hey, your game today. Let's take care of that. And it's really hard because, you know, when you get to pro ball, the big difference is that you go 6.5, 7 months straight and you pitch every fifth day. And you don't have time to ride the emotional roller coaster. You have to go out and go to work. And if you want to make it as a starting pitcher, you got to go 6 innings. And then you got to do it again. And then if you're feeling bad, doesn't matter. You got to go 6. If you're feeling great, great. Go 6, go 7, go 8. But teaching these guys that it's very similar to life. It's, you know, you have to show up every single day, do the best you can with that day, and stay open-minded to how you can get better, but get better. You know, and not giant, you know, a giant margin of development, but each day get one more rep better. You know, have one more better pitch, have one more better throw, have one more better lift. And that's the hard part, because we all want it now. We think we can expedite the growth process, and we can't, because failure and how you handle that goes hand in hand with all the successes that come. So, you know, I think that's one of the guys, like, you know, Clayton McGinnis, you know, that he's just done so well. Is, you know, I always have this thing where, you know, I tend to, when guys pitch bad, I tend to be, you know, I tend to really hunt the good for them. When they pitch good, I don't necessarily hunt the bad. You know, I kind of see where they take it, unless they're, they need to have the bad hunted. but I always remind them, hey, you went two innings, you gave up seven runs. You got a throwing program tomorrow. You got a throwing program tomorrow. Hey, you went seven, you punched out 14, didn't give up any runs. All I care about is your throwing program tomorrow, right? Who are you tomorrow? Like, great or not great, we got to come to work tomorrow. And I think when you start doing that, I mean, like, you know, McGinnis, against Arkansas, I was so pumped for him because he had done the one thing that I hadn't seen him do in 2 years, which was made a bat, you know, he walked a leadoff guy, made a poorly located pitch to one of the best left-handed hitters in the country up and in, and the guy hits it out left field. How does that happen, right? But still hit a home run. And instead of him trying harder and going to try to muscle his way out, he settled. I ain't seen him do that in 2 years. So after the game, you know, after his four innings, he goes, I go, hey, Clayton, I got to tell you, I'm so proud of you. I said, how you recovered, how you pitched, how you got back to being present, and you went each inning. I couldn't be more proud of you than I am right now. And he goes, yeah, got throwing program tomorrow. I go, whoa. Starting to be a dude, you know, he's starting to be a dude. Like, you know, he knew he made his mistakes. He knew he pitched well to finish it, but got right back on the process. And that's awesome. And, you know, you look at what this place is, right? You look at, you know, this place was not built on perception. It was built on substance. You know, Brent and Gene and you know, JT and the guys that were here. I mean, there was a core of grit and a griminess and a tenacity that it was us against the world, and we're going to sit here in the middle of the country, nobody's heard of us, and we're going to create a dynasty for 25, 30 years. And not built on, you know, these rankings or that rankings, they didn't care. They just wanted to go out and they wanted to beat people, and they wanted to work harder than everybody. And that's what these kids, we need to get back to. And I think this fall, you know, we've kind of put that into them. And Coach has done a great job with, especially our young position guys, of getting them back to, look, man, we're coming to work, we're coming to practice, and you guys better be ready to be coached.
Interesting. I want to come back to that before I forget. I wanted to ask about Clayton. Okay, he's on the mound there in Fayetteville. Was he able to do that himself? Did you have to go out there and talk to him?
No, I did himself. You know, I'm kind of... you know, I used to think, like, I'm going to go fix everybody's problems. And when I fix all their issues and I walk them along, you know, and I help them by not letting them taste failure, that I was being a good coach. And all I really realized was, is I was just protecting my ego. And, you know, this podcast, so we can talk about it. So I had two guys in high A in 2012 that, you know, for the first half of the year, they were terrible. And then for the second half of the year, I absolutely white-knuckled and made them do exactly what they needed to do. It wasn't their idea. It wasn't what they came to. It was what I knew they needed to do, and I made them do it. And I was exhausted. One ended up, they both ended up being all-stars. One ended up getting Rule 5 drafted to the Diamondbacks, and the other one ended up, you know, going to Double-A the next year. And I thought I'd done a great job. And I was pumped. I was told I did a great job. And, you know, two guys that everybody's waiting for them to get better, and they finally did what they were supposed to do. The only problem was is the next year they both were terrible. And they both didn't succeed, and they both didn't have sustaining growth from what they learned and what they went through. So I didn't really help them get to the big leagues because they both didn't, and they're both out of baseball now. And, you know, now, do I blame myself? I don't. you know, they easily could have just done what I told them to do and kept doing it. But at the same time, I wasn't part of the process of helping them be as good as they could be, because it wasn't their answers that they came up with. It wasn't their pain that they suffered through and got sick of sucking. So bringing that all back, you know, I've kind of gotten to the point to where I heard a long time ago from, you know, guys that coach that have taught me through coaching is, you know, can you walk by a bad swing? Can you walk by a bad throw? Can you let stuff just be bad? You know, let them go through the failure. Let the bullpen be bad. And then wait for them to be done and be like, did you do this? Did you do this? You know, you didn't step off and get a breath. You didn't recover yourself. Oh, man, I should have. Yeah. And then I straight up tell them, hey, man, I could have helped you about four pitches in, but I just let it be bad. And then they look at me like I'm crazy. Like, really? You let me suck? And I said, yeah, because I love you. I care for you. I need you to figure it out. You know, I can't figure it out for you all the time. I'll help you as much as I can, but you're going to have to figure it out when you go 60 feet, 6 inches against people. And that's why with Clayton, it wasn't me telling him something or taking a mound trip or coming up with some, you know, specific list of what he needs to do to come out of it. It was, hey, I'm a little juiced up. Something bad just happened. Big deal. I got to go 4-5 innings. Let me recover myself, go back to attacking the zone. And that's exactly what he did. He punched out the next two guys and then got the last guy to pop up. And, you know, and I think that specific incident and experience for him is going to carry him through the entire spring. That's the kind of stuff that springboards guys. You know, Kilgore had one last year. You know, where all he really had to do was, look, man, stop trying to be cute with your delivery. Stop thinking about your delivery. Stop being so smart and start getting very physical, very animalistic, and just go attack people. Who cares where it goes? And I was pitching him in some protected innings and all this stuff. And all of a sudden, I don't know if you remember, but we had a 1-0 game against Oklahoma. And 6th inning, I walked down the bullpen. I said, you're going the 7th. And we need to win this game. Are you going to be able to do it? He goes, yeah, let's do it. And he goes in there, falls 2-0. And all of a sudden, you saw him step off the mound. He goes back, gets off the mound, clears himself, gets the rosin. It's kind of his yellow light when we talk about. Resets himself, gets up there, throws 3 straight fastballs by the guy, punches out the next guy in 3 pitches, and pops the last guy up. And he comes back to me, he goes, just throw the ball. I said, yeah. And the rest of the season, I mean, he was one of our most reliable guys. So it's times like that you're waiting for these like, I don't know, it's just like an awakening of the mature part of them, you know, because we can come up with all the answers we want, but you know, if they don't come to them, we're not really coaching. We're just directing and facilitating and training. So that's what the Clayton thing was, to answer not really long answer.
Sure. No, that's interesting. Where does the pitcher get away from just throwing the ball hard? And
oh, it's so hard. It's so hard because a lot of guys, we bring them here because they throw hard. And we bring them here because and we have to. And so there's a process of development. The ones that throw hard and command and can pitch, they don't make it to college. You know, because the currency of professional baseball is pitching. So they get rewarded for throwing hard, and they don't get punished for not commanding the ball in high school, but they do here. And then so the overshoot in the dichotomy of pitching is overthrow to aim. So you back them off, hey man, you don't have to throw that hard. Well, they'll downshift all the way down to aim and locate. And then you got to spend a lot of that developmental process of teaching them what's your competitive effort level. You know, what is the pitch that you pitch and what's the pitch that you throw? you know, and guys tend to throw their fastballs and then they try and pitch their off speed. Well, it needs to be the exact opposite. You know, they need to be able to pitch with their fastball and then throw their off speed. It's crazy, you know, and there's probably a better way I could come up with explaining it, but when you're running through this dichotomy of maximum effort, head whacking, throwing the ball as hard as you can because you think that's going to get you out of trouble versus being able to stay to, you know, I always say this to them, the fallacy of stepping up is ridiculous. You never step up. It's the guys that are able to, it's like, you know, did Michael Jordan step up? I don't think he did. I think Michael Jordan and the Kobe Bryants of the world, you know, and this is a fact, they worked so hard and they were so much better than everybody else that when the pressure and all that stuff came down, they had the ability to just do what they do. They didn't do any more. They didn't do any less. They didn't step up. They actually fell down onto their training. And so being able to get guys to go, look, let's raise our training level. Let's raise our attention to detail in our work now when everything gets going crazy. Can we mentally recover ourselves? Can we get our breath, our pre-pitch routine? Can we settle into who we are and just compete right there, regardless of road, home, inning, pitch? Can you do that every single pitch, every single day? And that's where you can start to get guys to understand, okay, who I was when I got here needed to die, and I needed that boy in me needs to die because I need the man that's going to stay the course, that's not going to do too much. He's going to be who he is. And when we fix stuff with how we work and our habits, not in the game. You know, and that's a hard process, man. I mean, it's a lot of failure that comes into that. But it also takes, you know, coaches that are walking alongside guys, explaining to them what's happening, not always directing them, which is really hard because you got to throw your ego out.
And to kind of bring this full circle then, so you have freshmen on this team who will watch Clayton McGinnis recover at Arkansas and pitch well. Is that when the experienced guys on this team help you teach, help you pass that along?
Yeah, you know, and, you know, Coach Butler, Coach Butler talked about it the other day. It's like, you know, Clayton, it took you a long time to get where you're at, right? And he was saying in front of a lot of guys, and I think what it does is you can help kind of expedite the process for the freshmen, because what they'll do, because I put them around each other and I make them buddy up and I make them teach each other, what happens is they start to gravitate towards, like, you know, Clayton. So Clayton's got, I think Clayton has Carver as his pitching buddy and Stevenson. So those two guys, they're going to kind of gravitate towards that maturity and that strength that Clayton has. And then they're going to start to go, okay, I just did this. What did you do when you did this, Clayton? And Clayton's like, hey, man, you got to take your breath. You got to get off. You got to pull yourself back together, and you got to get back to competing. The tough thing is, you know, does confidence come before success? And, you know, probably not. Not at this level. You know, so, you know, I got to put those guys in position to succeed, but they also have to have a lot of voices around them with me and the other guys and Coach Butler and Sammy, you know, being able to talk to them about what success really is, you know, and that's in the process. But they still have to understand that when we go into these games, we got to win, man. We got to win now, and we got to get this stuff done, you know. And how they, you know, categorize it in their heads of what a loss really means, and, you know, being able to point out the good, be able to point out the bad, and be able to work on the weaknesses but maximize strengths. That's the art of the whole thing. And that's what's really hard to do. But, yeah, I mean, they're talking. I see Siegel and McGinnis and Snavely and Barnhouse. These guys are teaching their butts off, which is, in turn, it's kind of a trick because they're actually making themselves a lot better because they're reinforcing it to them, you know. So, yeah, that's been good, you know.
You mentioned some of the ways that this program was built. Now that you're in your third year, you know, I know you've met former Shockers, people coming back for alumni weekend and things like that. Yeah, what kind of sense have you gotten from how this program was built going back to 1978?
I wanted to come here out of high school. I was nowhere near, you know, good enough to come here. this was always like the dream world to me, to be able to play at this level that Wichita State was at the time. And when you talk to people, they talk about the wins. They talk about the way that they competed, and they just beat on people, and they, you know, and the love that they have for Gene and for Brent. And I don't ever hear people say, I was a Shocker. I hear them say, I am a Shocker. You know, it's part of who they are. And I think you look at, you know, some of the guys, the amazing people that I've met. I mean, I think a lot of the stuff that they took from here has propelled them into being successful in life. And I'm not just talking about the Pelfreys and the Dreiferts and, you know, the guys that played in the big leagues. I'm talking about just the people that are unbelievable in business and unbelievable in relationships and their marriages. And now, I mean, you have the gamut of, you know, the spectrum of guys that have done well and haven't done well. But, you know, you start talking to them about their experiences. And I had all of our pitchers do that last year, and I'm going to do it again this fall, was call up these guys and talk to them about their experience and how they got recruited and what their favorite stories were and who their favorite teammate was and what their favorite moment was and stuff. And, you know, the guys were so excited about that, and they couldn't wait to present it to the group. So I thought it was when I think about what this place, you know, was and what we're trying to make it to be, and to get it back to not only be what it was, but also continue to add to the legacy and to the fabric of what this place is. You know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of anxiety, and there's a lot of, you know, excitement, you know, that I feel and the coaches feel that, hey, man, let's get this place back to where it needs to be, and then let's further it. Let's make it better than when we got here. So, you know, the process has probably taken a lot longer than coaches wanted to, but it's moving in the right direction, you know, and we need to take stewardship of the program, but we also need to make it better.
All right. Shocker baseball this week. Shocker World Series starts on Thursday. Also games Friday and Sunday. They're kind of waiting on the weather before they get real locked in on times, but there will be baseball at X Stadium this weekend. The annual Halloween scrimmage is Saturday at 1. Mike, do you have a costume picked out?
Yes.
Can you reveal it, or is that something that people are going to need to come out here to see?
Oh, now we got to put people in the seats, so we're going to hold them up in the air.
What's the best costume you've seen in your short time here at Wichita State? But you've seen a scrimmage or two. What'd you like the most?
I think Paxton Wallace's Bam Bam outfit last year, because it kind of just fits him. It's just Bam Bam. And then my first year, when I think it was Janista, Hoyer, Schwanke, and Bohm had the four Tyrannosaurus Rex blow up. Costa, those were hilarious. That was really funny. But no, there's been some really good ones. And you know, I think it's a good time for those guys. It's really fun to watch. So please come on out. It'll be a really good time.
Yeah, that's turned into a nice deal here at Wichita State. All right, this has been the Roundhouse Podcast. Thank you for listening. I'm Paul Sullentrop of Wichita State University of Strategic Communications. We've talked with Mike Steele about Wichita State baseball. Thank you.